Welcome to another episode of the Woman's Had a Dream podcast. My name is Lee Finch, and as ever, I am joined by Danny Baker. We've got a special guest on the show, which is Andy Brazel. And he is a, if you didn't know, he is a European football expert, a presenter on the Football Ramble podcast, a TalkSport expert as well, and everything football. And he's a massive Wimbledon fan, and he'll be joining us shortly. But Danny, how are we? Are we good?
I'm absolutely wicked, mate. How are you doing? All right? Is it got any warmer down where you are?
Well, I live in Southend, which is we have our own climate down here. We're one of the warmest places in the country because we are where we are on the Thames Estuary. It brings all the bad weather across the estuary and Kent. So it was a bit of a touch this morning. It was quite nice not having
Southend's Essex, isn't it? Is it the Essex Riviera down in Southend? Is it?
Well, yeah, it's the most beautiful part of Essex, Southend. So, do you know what I mean?
Well, the only question I was going to ask today is: football getting a bit too complicated? And the reason why I'm saying is that the beautiful game is the beautiful game because jumpers for goalposts, you get a ball and you play. Now, looking at Ref Watch on Sky and all the other places, with VAR, with random offside decisions, with lots of interpreting the rules, or interpreting if you like, has the game just become too complicated, or did it need to get to that point? That's my question.
It is too complicated. We spoke about this last week with regards to offsides. Does anyone know what offside is anymore with the Rashford goal? Bruno Fernandes goal for Man U, where Rashford was offside. It should have been offside, but it wasn't. Do you know what I mean? There's loads of cases of that now. Football for me has got too complicated. If you look now as well, FIFA or Chelsea have done the financial fair play where they've got that little rule they kind of bent to get people on 8-year contracts, meaning they don't full play of it. They're now going to clamp down on that after that's already happened. Do you know what I mean? I think if you've got shed loads of money to spend, why can't you spend it? It's like having a millionaire next to you. You can't tell him to buy a house because he's, you know what I mean? It's not fair for the street for the rest of you. I think it's just, yeah, football's just.
I mean, I love the game, right? We love football and I love watching it, but it just seems to be such a lack of flow in a lot of the football matches. It's quite rare to watch like an end-to-end, the referee just letting the game go. There's so many stops and starts, and I just feel like if there was a way of simplifying it or making our world a bit easier, maybe the spectacle would be better. I don't know.
I think, again, it's great that we're going to be speaking to Andy because, again, he's a European football expert. I like my European football myself. I go out to watch a lot of European football, and I find watching European football is a lot simpler a lot easier to watch than it is watching the English game at the moment, as you said. But it is, I think football is becoming too complicated. The contracts, you know what I mean? Players leaving. I don't like the modern game, as people know, the sanitized of football now. Do you know what I mean? We got told what songs we shouldn't be singing and stuff like that. The use of flares and stuff, which I kind of get. There's a safety element behind that. But again, if you watch a lot of European football, they do it safely and stuff like that. I just find, it's hard. It's
complicated. Should we ask our guest? He's the European expert, for God's sake.
He's a football expert. So, yeah. Andy, what do you think? Is football getting too complicated?
I could have lived... Firstly, thanks for having me on, fellas. Secondly, I could have lived without VAR coming in at all, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, I could. It feels to me... I know this is a bit like a turkey voting for Christmas, but it feels TV-driven rather than necessarily supporter-driven. I think from the off, the whole problem with VAR is that very little thought was put into what sort of experience it was for the fans who are in the stadium. And that, to me, is a massive issue, because if COVID's taught us anything, it's that the fans in the stadium are absolutely vital, even if only to the TV spectacle, if you're looking at it from a TV perspective.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think the problem with VAR is it worked so well. I think, was it in a World Cup or the European Championship before they brought it into English football? So it worked really well. Everyone thought, this is how we're going to have it here. And we said last week, if you look at the World Cup just gone, it worked actually quite well because all the officials were all down the same line. They knew what the rules were. They knew what VAR was. Where here, it just seems like there's a different VAR official, and it's all depending on what they see and how they feel it's going to be. It's like us four here now, could be watching a game, and we see things as a yellow card, but Andy, you say, no, I don't think, I think that was just a normal tackle. And it's just how they feel at the gate. And what I don't get as well is why we don't get more ex-footballers involved in VAR and involved in that side of it as well.
I mean, I'm cat out of the bag here. I've never been to a football match with VAR at it. I've never, ever been. I don't know if you have, Lee. I'm sure you have, Andy. What is the is the supporter experience? Because for me, from what I see, an incident happens. No one in the ground has got any idea what the hell is going on. There's like a void, and then a decision is made. Now, like you said, Andy, it's not. It can't be a great thing for fans, but I'm a huge cricket fan. It's on the screen. You can watch it live. I don't quite understand why there isn't that. Let's bring the supporters in on the journey.
I guess it's a slight prejudice against football supporters. I think a lot of people in the authorities think that supporters can't handle it and they'd misbehave if that came up, which I think is quite unreasonable. But I think it's evolved a little bit, so it will tell you on the screen the issue that's being examined. But, you know, I think of going to Tottenham and earlier this season and a Harry Kane potential winner against Sporting being ruled out after, you know, it was incredibly deflating for the Tottenham friends I was with, because, you know, they go crazy thinking they've scored a last minute winner. Mm. And, you know, I realise that's a lot of English people's problem with it, the fact that it sort of kills that spontaneity. But the fact that they were poring over it for, I think, 3.5-4 minutes. I mean, the first time I regularly saw VAR being used in live football, I was out in Turkey recording some shows there, and I did a couple of matches there. And it meant 7 minutes of stoppage time at the end of every half. And I thought, life's too short for this. I don't even care if they get it right in the end. Just can we all go home and get on with our lives? I think, going back to what I said originally, the big problem I have with VAR, I think it's led to just really the distrust of officials. I think that's got worse and worse. And I think really people who don't go to football, and there are a lot of people who don't go to football because, well, it's bloody expensive, especially in England. Yeah, and, really, you know, even down at our level, I know people talk about the Premier League being expensive. It is expensive in League Two and the National League as well. And, you know, you could say that's a cornerstone of British life. Everything's a bit overpriced. But on the other hand, I think we've, like, a lot of people completely forget what a live football experience is about. So not just from the fans having to put up with waiting about for 3.5-4 minutes for a decision to be taken, which is absolutely unacceptable. But people who watch football on TV all the time have no idea how difficult it is for a referee. And I think that it goes from the referee is wrong to the referee's an idiot to the referee is corrupt way too quickly from people who just really don't understand what it's all about.
Yeah, and that's my thing with it as well, is that it takes the on-field decisions away from the referees now. So the referees are like, well, if I make a mistake here, I'm just going to go to VAR anyway. It can just, VAR will look at it. Do you know what I mean? So they're kind of, I think they should be looking at the monitors a lot more, especially with the Rashford one. I don't know why they didn't say to the ref, go and have a look at it and deem if you think he was interfering, as you're that match official, it now comes down to your decision, which I think that's what it should be, which I believe it is being taken away from the actual officials on the day.
And the worst one is the FA Cup, not having one every single game. Like, if you can't have it in every single game, don't have it. You can't make a good game. I just remember so many games where it's like, I used to drive me around with the League Cup. It was like, you win on the night, semi-final, two legs. Like, what? What's that about? It should be the game when you buy into, you know, you buy into it at the beginning, you get to the end. But anyway, so we've been talking about live football experiences, Andy. No Wimbledon game. What on earth are you doing? Are you walking the dogs? Are you finding a local game? You know, game got called off on Saturday. Good game got called off tonight. What are you doing?
I tell you, it's much warmer up here in the northeast. If it was at St James's Park, we'd be playing Walsall tonight at a very empty St James's Park, obviously. I'm not sure how many people in Newcastle would want to watch Wimbledon versus Walsall on a Tuesday night. But yes, yeah, it's disappointing because now, like, with living up north and with working, like, Wimbledon is... it's a real treat for me. I think it's probably why I get less angry about a lot of Wimbledon-related stuff than a lot of people. Because when I'm at Plough Lane, I'm still feeling that, oh my God, it's actual Plough Lane. It's actual us in Plough Lane. And I guess I've probably been about, 10, 15 times so far? And it still feels magical. Honestly, I still feel like when I was first going to the football as a kid, and that's a pretty great thing.
So talk us through your Wimbledon journey then, briefly. So you said you're supporting football as a kid. Have you always been a Wimbledon supporter, or has it just
yes.
been... Oh, wow.
Yes.
So go on, talk us through. Go, give us a yarn.
So, well, I've supported Wimbledon since the 80s. So basically, when I was at school and I started getting into football when I was, I guess, about seven or eight, everyone in my class was either a Liverpool, because they were amazing at the time, or a Man United fan. Maybe a few Arsenal in there, and I thought, no, I'm not doing any of that. I want to support a club who I can go and see every so often, who I can, you know, have a connection with. Yeah. And so I started supporting Wimbledon because I'd read about them in the newspapers. It wasn't far from where I lived in South London, and you know, I pored over football news in the newspapers when I was like 8 or 9, and obviously Match and Shoot as well. But Wimbledon coming up the leagues just really like caught my imagination. So I guess I would have said I was a supporter from about sort of, I guess, about 84, 85 ish, just when we're on the cusp of getting in the old first division for the first time. But I could never go from that point because my dad worked Saturdays, and then my dad was out of work for a bit, so he couldn't afford to go. And then he got a job where he didn't work Saturdays, and we obviously had like some money again. So the first game I went to was August 87, where we played Everton, who were then champions. That's right, in the week that Frank Lampard got sacked, Everton as champions. And Alan Cork scored. The food was bad. The Plough Lane was just old Plough Lane. It was amazing. And I think I only missed a couple of home games that season, actually. When they were on consecutive weeks, I couldn't afford to go on consecutive weeks. So, for example, I made the very bad decision to sack off the cup game against West Brom and go to Watford in the league, which was the first one we lost for ages. They got relegated that season and we lost at home to them, which was really annoying. Because in that season, we beat Arsenal, we beat United, we drew with that incredible Liverpool team, yeah. We hammered Spurs, and of course we won the FA Cup at the end of it. And you know, when you're there and you're 11, you're thinking, oh yeah, it'd be brilliant. Like when we go on and, you know, win a succession of first division championships, you know, we'll think of this as the starting point. You know, I wish it had happened a little bit later so I could have appreciated it a little
bit. So you actually
more.
Understood what the hell was going on. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
But that's what I was going to, because obviously when we won the FA Cup, we obviously didn't get into Europe. And as we said before, you're clued up on your European football and stuff. I think that's one of the biggest misdemeanor that we've ever had is that we never got to play in Europe, because
Andy, do you think we'd have done all right, Lee, as well? Do you think we'd actually would have done all right in Europe?
Oh, I think we would have smashed teams all over the place in Europe. I think they wouldn't have known what hit them at that time when the crazy game was in full flow.
Imagine
boombox at the San Siro and stuff like that. Can you imagine Real Madrid coming to Plough Lane? It would have been Selhurst then as well. We probably would have had to play. But it would have just been, I think it would have been a met. Like one of my best football in watching Wimbledon was when we went to Frankfurt and we went to Offenbach in the pre-season not long ago. And it was just amazing being in a European city, watching your club, and the fact that Wimbledon never got there, it just, I think, is gutted. How do you think we would have done? I think we would have done all right, Andy. I really do.
Yeah, I think people would have found it very, very difficult to handle indeed. But, you know, you think that when English clubs were banned from Europe, they were kind of at the peak of their powers in a certain way. So, yeah, it would have been really, really fascinating to see. I still have occasional thoughts, you know, like when we were heavily linked with Gabriel Batistuta as a sort of sweetener for leaving Plough Lane and going to Selhurst Park. You know, that was meant to sort of soothe us. He ended up choosing Fiorentina. I don't know why. Yeah. But,
can you imagine that? Batistuta for Dean Holdsworth in shock horror swap. That would have been absolutely... Gary Blissett chucked in as a sweetener.
I think I would have preferred Dean Holdsworth.
So in terms of where we're at now, Andy, in terms of the Super Wombles, give us a lowdown season, squad. Where do you think we're at as a club in a minute?
I want to know what you guys think, actually, because you will see Wimbledon more often than me with work and physical distance. I don't get to see them as often as I might do. probably in person, I get to about 8 games a season. I get to see quite a lot on the iFollow as well, increasingly so. I find it harder to stay away. It's funny. I felt like this when we got relegated from the Premier League in 2000, just before the MK stuff. I felt myself get behind the club even more. And I've felt that this season, actually. I've felt that I can't get enough of Wimbledon this season. It's a weird thing to say, especially after the way that last season ended.
Yeah,
like not
definitely.
Winning in 27. But it's like, right, we're gonna come back. Wimbledon, don't give up. This is where we start again. And honestly, like I said, I'm maybe slightly less angry about things than people who spend their hard-earned on going to every single game. But I do feel that this season's been pretty positive so far. Not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but like after the back end of last season, honestly, I'm just grateful to see us win some games. Mm. I'm sure we'll talk about Ayoub Assal in a minute, but I have to say I've enjoyed not just him playing really well and scoring goals, but absolutely shithousing opposition supporters has been really joyful. That and Harry Pell, of course, doing what he does is pretty fantastic. And the fact that we're finally at a point, like 20 years into AFC Wimbledon, where we can prolifically produce players of quality, which to me feels like the Wimbledon that I grew up with when I was like 10 or 11. You know, it was always a huge part of Wimbledon that we, you know, Plough Lane limited us. Now, this current incarnation of Plough Lane doesn't have to limit us, and there's room for expansion and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, really, we were forced to grow and sell players back then in the 80s. And now, while we're self-funding and, you know, who knows what the future supporters will think in terms of the ownership model, we'll have to wait and see. But I personally obviously hope that it maintains it as it is. But, you know, we've got to find ways to be creative. And that to me is the Wimbledon spirit, you know, home growing, being creative, looking to do things a little differently. And that feels good to me that you have Haas and Jack Curry and before that Ayoub in the team.
No, I totally agree, and I think we need to look at the positives a lot more. I'm one of these people that can be very negative and very fickle.
Really?
With regards to Wimbledon.
Yeah, hold the back page, mate.
But I agree with what you said. When you think we had a goalkeeper that came through our ranks has just been sold to Bruges for £500,000. Mm. We had Jack Redoni before Sal that went for 800 grand, I believe. That's the figure that was touted around. We've got Billar and Curry, who look just unbelievable at the moment in League Two, and I think they could step up. We've got other players coming through the ranks in Morgan, Bendel, people like that who are coming through. I agree, we have to look at that model. That is our model at the moment, that we have to sell and get people like Josh Davison in. Ali's come in now as two permanent. I agree with what you said, Andy. I don't think it's been perfect. I think Johnny Jackson was a bit naive when he first came in as a League Two manager. He thought he could bring in the Gunters, the Pierces, Brown, things like that. Haven't really worked. And it actually has been our youth players, the Curries and stuff, and Paul Callum-Bayes who've come to the front and worked for him. And he's found formations and stuff. And I think he's learning on the job. January is a big window for him, especially as we are going to be losing the Sal. And how we invest that money. I think the best thing we could do is just see where we go from here and hopefully invest it in the summer pretty well, because a lot of players, I think Gunter might retire at the end of the season. I think Pierce might go, and we'll have some good wages coming back from them with some good money from Masao. So,
talking of Callum-Bayes, actually, amongst those youth products, maybe you can tell me, Lee and Danny, I have a feeling that the Callum-Bayes song, you know, to Backstreet's Back, was invented at Ipswich Away.
It's one of my friends. Because,
100%.
Really? Because I was at that game. Remember, there was that massive queue to get in, and it was cash only, which seemed really anachronistic even then. It was 27 quid.
In Ipswich.
Yeah, exactly. 27 quid to get in. I paid 25 because they've run out of change. And I wanted to know whether that it had the feeling of a song that was being made up on the spot, but I love that still.
It was one of my friends, Richard Cassell's Titch. He'll love this. He's got a big enough head anyway, but yeah, he'll love the fact that you brought it up. But yeah, it was his song. I think they'd gone down to the the marina in Ipswich, and they got there quite early, so they'd been there all day working on that. And that song, and then Ipswich Way was when they first brought it out, and it kind of taken off since then. So
I think that's one of the best things though about being a Wimbledon fan, and we talk a lot about it. And like I said, we, you know, on this podcast, we sort of undulate between the positive, the negative, the ups and downs. And we, as hopefully for anyone who listens, you kind of feel that we're just two fans, literally sitting in our rooms. I mean, I'm still in my work gear. Lee's got his stupid hat on, and he looks horrendously well, beautifully splendid, and we look horrendous. But in general, it's just that we're kind of big enough that we feel like we're punching a little bit now, but we still have got that relatively small, tight community where we know the random bloke we see, we know the songs, we know the little in stories, the little funny bits and pieces. And I guess it's just that. It's that always going to be that delicate balance between growing big and become the monster getting bigger, but we kind of slowly but surely kind of drift apart a little bit to welcome in others, or whether you keep that sort of small, tight-knit group, which everyone loves, and you know that bloke over there, every away game, even I could go on my own and go with 10 people and I have the same experience, because you kind of, it's a nod to that bloke, it's that experience there, I saw you were here, or it just, I guess it's that always going to be that sort of quandary. Do you get bigger and you lose a little bit of that connectivity? Because I always found that when I went to the Emirates, when I was watching staff or watching Premier League football at times, you go and watch opposition teams and it's too fragmented. There's just too many people, or you've got the guys who are hardcore, and in between them is a family who come for their once a season game, which is fantastic. And it's that balance between keeping the community really thick and strong and having that feeling like it's a fortress, but also welcoming new fans. I guess it's that evolution, the gentle growth, which is what we're after. But so far, planning's been great. We've managed to get rid of the voodoo of it, and it is lovely to actually go to a football season and feel like a game you can turn up, you might actually win it, rather than are we going to nick a 1-1 draw here away in the, you know, in the chucking down rain.
Dan, what I love most about it is when I go on Twitter the other day, I see loads of fans giving Plough Lane a bit of stick, saying it's like a Lego stadium and it's not very nice. And these were Stevenage fans, Gillingham fans, giving our stadium stick, which I love, because it's Plough Lane. And as Andy said earlier, I still get the goosebumps when I walk up the road. And I said to one of my mates the other day when we walk up, what I love is that the fact that you can't see a stadium there. You just see loads of flats, and then boom, you've got the Wimbledon crest, and then you're in Plough Lane. I love it. As I said, there is some things that are the wrong that are being improved. Danny Macklin's coming and hopefully going to get stuff done. But yeah, I still love the fact that we got Plough Lane, and every time you go there, it's our stadium. And again, as Andy said with Shithousery, I love the fact that fans don't like it. Do you know what I mean? They're not there to like it. It's our stadium. It's what we built. And if they don't like it, I don't care.
I totally agree with that, Lee. And I think that is a real positive from this season. The amount of opposition fans on Twitter and message boards who've complained about Wimbledon when we've been in our good run, doesn't that feel good? Doesn't that feel old fashioned? Say they're the worst team we've played this season. I'm like, oh yeah.
But you're right, Andy.
These disses are like performance enhancing drugs to me. Come on,
we've gone from being like the team that everybody hates in the Premier League, and oh bloody Wimbledon, just bugger off, they've ripped things up in front, to all of a sudden becoming a team that everyone's kind of, you know, almost you know, they're my second team, or look out for their results. It's quite a weird sort of transition. Of course, it's sort of taking its journey, but to go from god bloody hell Wimbledon, they're rubbish, they just chuck it up in the air, the pitch is crap, they've got no fans, to actually they're kind of this cute little London club that everyone kind of likes. It's a weird evolution.
It is so weird, Danny. And I think the thing that really struck me, because like when AFC Wimbledon were founded, I was in my 20s, and I remember like taking the train from Clapham Junction through to Norbiton. And it's interesting talking about like different generations and how they might see the club and the future of the club differently and all that sort of stuff. I remember that the first time hearing people around me who were like maybe 10 years younger, teenagers, saying, well, you know, that they would maybe support a Premier League club, and Wimbledon would be their, you know, their game that they could get into for a reasonable amount of money. And the way that Wimbledon fans, whether they were or younger Wimbledon fans, whether they were or weren't fans of Premier League clubs, the way they have that kind of "we are the Man United of non-league" attitude, and they're just like, you know, slag other teams off for having no fans and having shit stadiums, and I'm like, what? That always happened to us.
Yeah,
you know, us being like really big bollocks. And I kind of wonder, like, you know, if that has an effect on people's even more like experienced or long-standing fans' expectations nowadays, that because we plowed through the leagues at such a rate of knots at the start, it becomes like difficult to accept that you have a natural ceiling, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I speak to my boy, he's 13, he loves it. We go most games. I took him up to Hartlepool this year. And I tried to explain to him that when I was putting Wimbledon FC and when I first started going, there'd only be about 100 people going up to Hartlepool. There wouldn't be many people. Now, we're selling out Leyton Orient within a week. I can't get I need two tickets for it. Danny, I know Danny does. There's so many people that can't get tickets to go to Orient now. We sold 1,500 within, 7 days, which is, we would never have done that as Wimbledon FC. I don't think we would have sold it. I went to West Ham once when we never even sold out the away end. And that's just the District Line Derby, as they used to call it. Like, now we're taking 500 to Hartlepool away on the first away game of the season. We're taking thousands to, we'll sell out Gillingham now. And I just think that's what we're doing within the community. And I do give the people that do that, there's a guy called Dom that goes around and puts posters up and stuff. Yeah. I give them so much credit because they are raising our profile that people go, I don't want to go watch Chelsea. Like you said, when you were growing up, it was Chelsea, it was Man U, it was Liverpool. Actually, I'm going to go watch the team on my doorstep. There was a load of Irish guys in Bradford when we went to Bradford at home last game. Mm-hmm. And we were with a load of Bradford fans because we know them quite well. A load of Irish fans, they were supporting Man United in a pub against Man City. But they went and watched Wimbledon and they got right involved in it. They sat near with us, they were singing, they were loving it, they were giving it to the Brad. And that'd be people that might go, actually, I used to support Man U, I'm a Wimbledon fan now, and their kids will be a Wimbledon fan and stuff. And that's what I love most about it.
Well, that's the funny thing, isn't it? When people talk about the 3 p.m. blackout and, you know, that it needs to be kept going to protect lower league clubs, I'm really not convinced it does. And I know there'll be a lot of Wimbledon fans that disagree with me there. But to me, I think that football is really bad, and the European Super League is part of this. Football is really bad for having old guys telling kids how they watch football. It's like kids haven't got the attention span these days, you know, that they want something shorter, they want something more exciting. And it's like Florentino Perez, a like man in his 70s, like telling children and teenagers how they enjoy football. How would you know? You've absolutely no idea. And what I think is quite insulting to kids to think that they wouldn't know the difference between watching football on the telly and going to a game. If my two go to a game, they're engaged. They know it's totally different. You know, it's something that's a whole different experience. And as I said, unfortunately, because of prices, we've created a generation really where it's far, far more difficult to actually go and see your local team. But, you know, if football's on telly, they can take it or leave it. They'll be in the mood for it sometimes, or they'd rather watch their own telly sometimes. But, you know, if they're in the stadium, you know, I think when I've taken my younger one, my 9-year-old to Plough Lane, he gets there, he sits in his seat, unprompted, complains about the other team cheating, complains about the ref, like he's an old man. You know,
Well-trained.
I've not even had to do it. It's natural, Danny.
And I think that's spot on regarding pricing. We've got to price it, but I believe English football's got to be priced better. The Man U's, Chelsea, they can do it because they know if 1,000 people didn't turn up, they'll have 1,000 tourists turn up that week. It doesn't matter to them.
Yeah.
But we are doing stuff like Danny Macklin's doing stuff with Stockport on Saturday. Is £5 a ticket wherever sit. £5 a ticket, no matter. And I know Orient have done that this season. I give Gillingham again, they're away and it's horrendous, but under 14s get in for free if they're going with an adult. So that means that more kids are going to go watch it. And under 14 and under is quite a good age to get a free ticket for. Definitely, so I think that the clubs have to do things like that. And they as long as they do it. And it's not even the product on the pitch for me, because you can watch Premiership football and it'd be dire. There was 3-0 the other week on Sky. I think the other day there was 0-0. There were horrendous games. The only one that saved it was the Arsenal-Man U game. And Wimbledon can be the same. One week you can turn up, it'd be an amazing game of football. The next week it's awful. But what we do at Plough Lane, I think the fans area, the Hayden, the Womble going around, the food on offer, that's where you get people in and they stay, especially where we are in Wimbledon. It is an affluent area, and we talk about prices and stuff. Most people in that area are not really that bothered about paying 25 quid to go watch a league game, as long as they're getting a nice pizza and a nice atmosphere. And that's then upsets the other fans who want to sing the South London and the champagne song. But it's trying to find that balance, I think, at Wimbledon at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, talking of prices, Lee, should we move on to the Price is Right Ayuba Sal edition? Should we have a chat about him? See where he's at? What do you reckon?
Yeah, well, because it's a strange one for me, because we still haven't announced that he's left. And I think Graham Stacey put a thread on the other day regarding possibility the reason why. The club he's going to, Al Wacker or something like that. I don't know. You'll know around him.
Apparently. Yeah.
Maybe have put a bid in at the 1st of January, or even put a down payment on him, or paid the full amount on him straight away, and whatever his release clause was. But he can't sign for a team in Qatar because you have to be 21 to be played professional football in Qatar. Otherwise, it's against the law, which I thought was quite mad, but rules out there are just mad anyway. But yeah, so I don't get why it hasn't been announced yet, but apparently it's between 35 and 40 grand a week, tax-free. That's what he's going to be earning, which... You can't blame him for taking his family to Qatar. But, and my question to you, and we said this, do you think this now will be a precedent for other footballers saying to their agents, I've seen what's going on with Saudi Arabia with Ronaldo. We said Modric is now the next one, apparently going to be going there with a year left on his contract.
Will Nightingale rumoured as well.
But yeah, do you think this will now, well, with Vassal going, are you gutted obviously to see him go, but do you think this will now lead a door for players to be going to Middle East?
Lee, I am sad to see him go. But I, like from right when Robbo gave him his first proper run in the team, it was clear he wasn't going to be staying forever. I feel lucky we've had him for a while, and he's been really good. He's been really implicated. I think he cares. I know some people get annoyed with him being a bit of a brat sometimes, but I love that part of his personality. I love the fact that he's a flair player who will not accept being kicked about. And you know, is 10 bookings a season for Petulance? Bring it on. I think it's part of the entertainment. It's part of the Ayuba Sal brand. In terms of players going over, I mean, it's almost without precedent, isn't it? This sort of deal for a player who, much as we love him, great as he is,
it's
an unproven at the top level League Two player. It's remarkable. So, yeah, if and when this gets completed, it would not surprise me to have other players, because football is a small community. Footballers are a small community.
Yes.
So definitely people will be talking about it. His mates and their mates will be talking about what Abe's getting. I've absolutely no doubt about that. But I think we have to make a bit of a definition between Saudi and Qatar, because Saudi are in the process of trying to buy football at the moment. You know, you look at last week where we had not just that absolutely pathetic friendly between
the what Saudi was that? Stars and that PSG. Was pathetic. That was absolutely nonsense.
It was ludicrous. The third most important game in Saudi that week, because of course they had the Spanish Supercopa and the Italian Supercopa as well. But you look at that, and they are going all out to buy big stars. I mean, you look at some of the other players that Ronaldo is playing with at Al Nassr. It's mad. They're stacked with like top quality, extremely expensive foreigners. They're obviously going for the World Cup in 2030. Whereas Qatar have had the World Cup, so they're moving past that. But their whole thing now is about player development. So in that sense, like, I think Asal fits the bill, because you know they're looking at developing Qatari superstars now, and they're looking at the academy system, which have worked really hard on. The QSI, who own PSG, they've gone and bought a big chunk of Braga in Portugal, because not because they're the biggest club there, but you know they consistently finish quite high, but because they have a decent academy. So, I think to have that sort of concentration of quality young footballers from all over the world is where they're at. Whereas Saudi, which actually has got a deeper football culture. I mean, we saw that from, you know, how many World Cups they've been in and the contribution that their fans made to the World Cup. I was out there in Qatar for a bit. They're amazing, the Saudi fans. And you've got to separate the Saudi fans from the Saudi state. They seem to be doing a Chinese Super League and trying to buy everything, whereas I think Qatar are looking at a little bit differently now.
I've got a slightly different view on this. Is this a good move for us, Al? I mean, the money situation I get, right? And he's going to earn a lot of money, and there's no arguments on that. But from a simple footballing perspective, was this the right move for him? Now, he was going to get a load of money, but I'm just thinking the fact that he's going to now be over in wherever he's going to be, playing for Al Wakra, in terms of the spotlight that he would get there as opposed to the Championship, where I think he probably could have got low Championship, maybe high in League One. I'm also thinking about the fact of the next club. So he if he's going to play for Al Wakra for the next 2 years, his next move, you would think he would probably want to get to... Most footballers want to get to Europe, don't they? I feel like the Saudi and the Qatar project, which I'm going to call them, is kind of aiming for the absolute high-end superstar bits, trying to get younger players in. I just wonder, from a footballing perspective, for him to become a better footballer and for his career, my two questions are, one, is this the best footballing move for us, Al? And two, was £1 million for him, which is probably the rumoured amount, considering the likelihood of a relatively low sell-on, that we'll get any kind of sell-on from it, is this actually a good move for us, Al? Lee, what do you reckon?
No, I don't think for a footballing sense, it's not a good move for him. Obviously, money-wise, yeah, we've talked about that. He's going to be earning, tax-free money. As I said, 35, 40 grand a week is just mad. Footballing-wise, I'd preferred him to go on to the Championship or higher, but just shows there probably isn't many of them clubs looking at him thinking, yeah, we're going to spend £1 million on this player. Not many League Two players leave for £1 million unless you're going to somewhere like Peterborough and you've been established. As Andy said earlier, he's relatively raw to football. He had one and a half seasons in League One. He's only had this half season in League Two. I just think I don't know. If he goes and smashes it for 2-3 years in Qatar, where is his next move? Does he then get a European club, or does he come back to England and then does he then sign for a Championship club there? I don't know. Andy, would you...
I mean, is this a risky move? Do you think, Andy, is this a risky move for him? Or is this, for 40 grand a week, no worries?
I think that's the bottom line. Yeah. I think it has to be. And it opens up, I think, new horizons to him as well. I mean, if you're looking to climb the league ladder, the EFL league ladder as high as you can go, then maybe Bolton's your logical next step, presuming that was the most likely move otherwise. But I can understand that there's a lot more appealing to go and play in Qatar. We'll play against other top pros, there's no doubt about it, rather than slogging it out in League One or the Champo. I just think, when you look at that, I think Ali Maxwell from the Not the Top 20 pod, who comes to watch Wimbledon sometimes because he lives locally, put it to me. When we had Rudoni and Asau, and he was saying, which one would you rather leave? And I was like, well, I don't know. Like, I feel you could cash in more on Asau. Like, Rudoni's more of a sure thing.
Yeah,
you
know, agreed.
He's someone who's going to play like 300, 400 league games, no problem, if he doesn't get injured at a pretty high level, I would say.
Asau's got rougher edges, isn't he?
Yeah, well, the thing is, Asau, I think Ali put it really well. He says, Asau's got a higher ceiling, but maybe a lower floor. And I think that's probably the right way of putting it. And I think if you look at where he's at, I think there are a few aspects to it. There's maybe a cultural aspect to it as well, that he gets to go and play in a Muslim country. Certainly, like the Moroccan national team, if he wants to play for them rather than England, and I'm sure he's super excited about what they did in the World Cup. His options open so far. I think culturally, maybe that will be a nice fit for him and his family. And you talk about like going to Europe. Well, like, you know, you're not going to... I think Bolton to the Premier League is still an absolutely humongous leap.
Yeah, it's a miles jump.
Or to like continental Europe is a massive leap. Whereas I think if you go and play well in Qatar, you grow it over a number of years, while you're making an absolute fortune, by the way. And I'm not talking about this from a moral perspective or any of that. You know, that's for people to make their own minds up on.
Yes.
But in terms of football and football progression, as you were talking about, Danny, I think you look at it, you have a couple of good years in the Qatari Stars League, and bear in mind that the ex-technical director of PSG is the technical director of the league. So clubs in France will be having a look at you. Clubs in North Africa will be looking at you. Clubs in Egypt, for example, who pay well. Clubs in Turkey will be looking at you. I think it opens up a whole world that staying in the EFL wouldn't.
Yeah, and I was just looking there. They do play in the what they call the like Champions League out there as well.
Asian Champions League, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. So that would put his profile up there if he does well in that. Yeah. They finish third. Their manager is you'll probably know him, and Tintin Marquez that used to play for Espanyol, or manage Espanyol. Yeah. So I don't know if that it depends on how his attitude is when he's out there, because he gets away with it at Wimbledon. It does depend when players leave. You kind of get a little bit of leeway when playing for Wimbledon that you can be, as you said, petulant and stuff like that. He might not be able to get away with getting 10 bookings and missing games, big games out in Qatar, because it does mean a lot if they're finishing third. They want to win the league. They want to do well in the Champions League and stuff like that. He might not be able to get away with it. And as you said, he might, the cultural side of it, it might be good for his family and stuff. But he is a lad that was born in London. He was brought up in Croydon that way. It is if he can, and I think he will, and I think we might see him again. But I just don't know where after. Go on, Dan.
And the only question I was it a good deal for us? Do you think, in terms of the fact of yes it's £1 million, which we think is the rumored amount. Now we don't know the ins and outs of it, but that for me that sounds about right. In terms of the amount of money that he's on, I think 1.5 would have been the absolute ceiling. And I think getting him as our first sort of £1 million footballer coming in, for me, it I kind of feel that we got, I don't know any of the inside and outs, but £1 million up front, I feel was probably right.
That's the one for me, Danny, is it's rumoured between 1 and 1.4 million that we're getting. But for me, it's with Qatar money is that they should be able to afford to pay that up front, where if we were doing business with, say, a Bolton, that would probably be installments and we wouldn't be receiving that money straight away. We'd be getting, say, that I think they were only willing to pay about £500,000 to £800,000 for him, and we'd probably get £100,000 here, £100,000 there, where we should be getting at least £1 million straight off the bat, which is huge business for, again, a young kid that came for our youth ranks. That when you first saw the professional photo of him when he signed his professional contract, we said there's no way this kid's going to make it if he looks like that in four or five years' time. And lucky enough, he built out and he's done amazing. But we've just got £1 million for a player that we got for nothing. And as long as we reinvest that well, I know we've got debt to pay. Some of that will go to the debt. But if we can get some of that into our first team, we could pick up two players. We're not going to do that in January. You ain't going to replace a Sal in January. I think most people need to be realistic to that. But in the summer, if we've got Craig Cope and Jackson looking at players now, then we could get someone in that could do good business for us, and we could then move on for more money in the future.
So in terms of the Assal money, I mean, Lee alluded to it earlier, and I wonder what you think, Andy. We've got the £1 million for Assal. You know where we are in the league and where we're sitting. Obviously, we've lost a lot of loan players. Just curious from your angle, would you want to use that money to invest in the squad this year and have a punt? And think, do you know what, we're closer to the playoffs we ever go. Would you be thinking, do you know what, let's keep the money, let's consolidate where we are, and like Lee said, almost look at the older players and have a punt next year? I don't really feel like we can do both. I feel like we either have a punt this year and we use the money and we really go for it, or we sit back, we hold tight and we go again. I'm just curious, what would you do if you were Johnny Jackson?
Well, Danny, it's easier to buy players in summer. I don't think there's any two ways about that. You know, we are not the only club who's made shit signings in January. But the January market is based around clubs being over a barrel, basically, isn't it? You know, or players being over a barrel if they really want to play. Obviously, the Sam Cosgrove move is the obvious one in terms of that, but as we said, not the only one.
In terms of
where I'd actually like us to spend the money, I feel, because we have got lots of good young players that need to be encouraged, I don't think we need to throw the bag at it now. Also, I think bearing in mind the budgets of some of the other clubs, and I'm looking at like Stockport, is it really going to make enough of a difference? I think we have to play smart, especially as we're stabilising after what happened last season, especially as Lee said, as we're bedding in a new recruitment team. And the sort of players I would like to see us going for, as we're producing a lot of quality young players, I would like to see us go for that sort of, you know, not too young, not too old sort of player. So I think Davison and Pell, for example, perfect. I could live without more Gunters and Pierces. The plus being that they're on 1 year rather than 3 years, like when we got Crazy Appiah, for example.
So you're after like prime time footballers, aren't you? Really, like where are they at? I want them where they are.
Yeah, I think that's really, really important. I think old players can become a bit of a drain, but you do need that sort of experience to guide through the young players we had. I mean, Pell has been like pretty much faultless, I would say, so far. I mean, obviously he's got his limits as a footballer. They will do at this level, but I think the role that he's assumed has been like super important. If we get to a point as well in a couple of years where, like, you know, Callum Bailly, for example, evolves into that sort of footballer, which he looks like he's doing to me. He looks like he could really become a cornerstone of this team. Obviously got to 100 appearances quite recently. You know, if we can get the right experienced players that are actually ours, like Davison and Pell, and the young players, it means we're not so beholden to loans. And you know, I don't have a big problem with them not being our players or anything like that. You know, I loved Ramsdale. I love Force. I love Riley Towler. Riley Towler going absolutely broke my heart, by the way.
Yep.
But I just think that it does tend to be a bit scattergun with loans, especially with us, because we're not at the front of the queue. You know, we're not big enough to be.
And once you're in League Two, as you know, the moment if you have a really good season, they're going to pack you off and send you up one. And they, if you're
halfway through that season,
you know what I mean. And like I said, if you have a bad season, then you ruin the opportunity of dealing with. And obviously, we've had Brentford, Liam. We've been working a lot with Brentford, and we've had loads of great players. And now I don't know where we're at.
That's the question I was going to have for you two. What's our relationship with Brentford that now? Considering I know players come and go, and we shouldn't look at loan players, but with Paris coming in and then saying all the stuff he did at the start of the season, the stuff when he left, and now he's signed for the club up the road, do we have that same relationship with Brentford now, where we, you know what I mean, it seems like they've kind of done a number on us, but then his brother is coaching there as well now. I was fuming the other day more with Brentford than with Paris, because Paris didn't really do much. I didn't think he was that good.
I mean, if you think about in the last like X amount of years, the amount of guys who have been to Brentford and none of them have seen the season out. Presley didn't see the season out. Fors didn't see the season out. Madsek, what was it? Beck Sorensen. I know that was a COVID year, but he didn't see the season out. I think the only one who's seen the season out was Oxon, wasn't it?
No, he didn't see it either.
He didn't see it either. I mean, again, I feel like, and again, the Magoma one was a weird one because he started like an absolute rocket and we thought this boy is going to be serious. And I think he will be a good player in the future. I just feel like the change in the way that we played rather than, and again, Andy touched on it, you've got the experienced guys who, frankly, I think League Two, you don't necessarily get out of it with quality. You get out with people who know how to play in that league. You don't get out playing great football in League Two, I don't find. But what's interesting from the Brentford point of view is we've picked up a load of very good young players, and for some reason, and I said to you, Lee, it's like we got to the point where losing all of our best loan players, is that good or bad? I mean, I don't know. If you've lost all of our loan players, Nathan Young-Coombs has gone back, we lost Magoma, we've lost Hudlin. It's like, is that good for us? Is it because we've actually done a really good job and these players have gone, or is it bad because we're not picking the right ones or we're not treating them well?
I think the last two clauses in that, Danny, are quite interesting, because I think there are a couple. I mean, Huddersfield were clearly not happy with the fact that Hudlin wasn't playing more. But did he deserve to play more? I don't really think he did.
He must have been just a kicker for the Radoni deal, surely.
I mean that was clearly attached. I can understand why you would want to take a punt on Hudlin and see how he would do it at League Two. And I think it kind of worked out all right for us. We give him a little go. There were moments. There were a lot of non-moments, I think it's fair to say. But I think really, a lot of those recalls have to do with the fact that we're just producing good players now. And we would rather play ours that we're going to work with over a number of years, and frankly are better, I think, in the case of Biller and Curry, for example, than giving other players, giving other clubs players a go.
Did we let those players go, Andy, or were they taken from us? That's the kind of, you're right, we want to play our younger player, but we didn't decide to play Bendel or play somebody else over Magoma. That was taken away. So it's just a question of whether we've decided, you know what, moving forward in the season, we're thinking of going this way. I don't know. I guess the problem for me, and again, I don't know where anyone sits, I don't know whether we've lost the cards or whether we've chucked them away, if that makes sense.
I think there's a bit of both there, because I think part of it, obviously Brentford haven't been super happy with how it's gone for those guys. And I think, you know, as you were saying earlier, Lee, not a lot of them have succeeded, really, those players we've got from Brentford. I mean, it's good to have that relationship, but if we're just taking players that aren't really going to make an impact for us, I mean, too many more Presleys, and you'd never really want to borrow a player off them again, would you? So I think it's quite difficult. The problem is nowadays, and Mark Robinson alluded to it actually, and you know, whatever people thought of how it ended up with Robbo, he did an enormous amount for the club.
Yeah.
In terms of development, I can't think of many better coaches. I think what he did is make us aware of the fact that if you're going to be able to borrow players from Premier League clubs or Championship clubs, nowadays you need to present them with a total plan. How are you going to use them? Are you going to meet the amount of minutes that they need? Are you going to look after them properly? And the fact is, at some point, I don't think it's our fault. I don't think it's the loaning club's fault, but their interests and our interests are going to, and the players' interests are going to diverge. And for that reason, at some point, you are going to lose some of those players. And that's just how it happens. And we just have to take it on the chin if we're going to borrow players.
No, I agree. And I think, because I was having a conversation, we talked about my mate earlier, come up with the Paul Callum Bailey song. He said this is probably the worst window, worse than last January. And I disagree with it. I know we're losing the sound. We lost Towler, which are the two biggest losses that we've had during the January window. But we've also sent back some loans, or they've been recalled. But we've also bought Ali in, who's our own player now on a 2.5-year deal, which is huge. We've brought Little in, who could be released by Forest Green. If he does well, we could sign him. Or, do you know what I mean? He's going to want to do well, because he goes back to Forest Green next year. They're in League Two. They know he can play that level. So it's win-win for everyone. I think that this year in January, other than the new signing we've just made, who doesn't look great on paper, but then nor did Lyle Taylor, nor did Elliot.
We've got to
look at it and think, right, we've got a permanent signing out of it. We're still going to make another signing to come, I believe. I think it's a good window. If we can get Josh Davison and Ali playing well together up front, we just need to now replace the Sal, which I don't think we were ever doing that January. So
it's an interesting one. I mean, like I said, I guess before the window came up, we said a certain number of players, and that's without losing a lot of players. The one that's always curious to me, though, is NYC. And the fact that he started well, I felt that he was a little bit unfit and he was coming back into it. But to lose him, I'm not sure it's a deal breaker as such, because like Andy said, I think we've got other players in those positions who can do it. But I just thought it was fascinating that, what you know, that was him, Magoma. Magoma, you could kind of see it, but NYC was completely out of the blue. I never saw it coming at all. And I guess it is just we'll see where the club's at and where our finances are as to whether we want to take a punt and have a go. But I think Andy's right. I think unless there's a permanent player who would stick around, like we had Lee Brown. I know Lee Brown's not been particularly brilliant for us late, let's be honest. But I think the fact of an older guy or a player who is running out of their contract, who goes, do you know what, I fancy joining and being with you for 18 months, I wouldn't personally be chucking too much money. But then again, you know what these Premier League teams are like. They'll chuck players for free and go, look, just give him some game time. We're just wanting to get out into a new environment. I've got no problem with taking somebody, but I don't want it to cost us anything.
No, I agree.
I hate it when we agree. It's really annoying. Right. So in terms of the only things we've got to chat about now is Stockport, obviously. Stockers. Stockport home. Big game of the whole year. Over to you, Lee.
Yeah, I did. Andy, are you because I know you said you had to go pretty sharpish, or you're okay to stay for two more minutes to talk about Stockport?
Yeah, two more minutes of school, yeah.
Right, yeah, Andy, so over to you. Stockport, go. Talk to me.
Well, I'm expecting them to finish in the playoffs, certainly. So it's going to be tough. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The problem is, the last live game I went to was Orient at home. So in my mind, it was incredible. Yeah, like the atmosphere, the guts with which the team played, all of it was brilliant. But obviously, because of that, I still have it in my mind that we are Pep's Barcelona, or at least Harry Bassett's Wimbledon. So maybe I've got a slightly inflated view of our abilities at the moment. Honestly, I can't wait for this month to be over, not just because of the postponements, but to get the window shut, to get the squad settled, to get to a point where we're at least building towards what will look like a good team next season, and knowing in the summer what we need to maybe have a go for promotion next year. I feel that's the realistic way of looking at it. But, you know, bearing in mind what we're saying about that Orient game and what you were saying earlier about, Lee, about getting everyone in for a fiver, you know, this could be, I think, one of those games where, you know, there's a really great atmosphere there. Yeah. And, you know, that Plough Lane will really take off. And, you know, we've been lucky because, you know, there were people who were saying, oh, we won't fill the ground when it was built. Well, that's proved to be nonsense. We've filled it pretty consistently. You feel like the local community have embraced or re-embraced Wimbledon. Embraced Wimbledon like never before. Like, not like when we even had top flight football there, to be honest, Plough Lane. You know, it feels as if local people have become quite attached to Wimbledon. And I think this is another step in that direction. I mean, unfortunately, I won't be there, but...
Oh, typical. You're probably somewhere romantic, aren't you? You're taking the wife to Geneva to watch a local derby or the El Clasico in Paraguay.
You know what?
Of course you are.
Postponements for me mean more midweek games, mean I'm in London, mean I've got more of a chance going. So it's like last January when all the games got COVIDed off at the end of 2021. I mean, when we had midweek in January, I absolutely loved it. I mean, obviously, we didn't win any of those games. We didn't often look like winning any of them, but I really enjoyed that anyway.
I think you're right with regards to the atmosphere on Saturday, because the £5 Stockport are going to fill their end. They'll bring a load of fans down. Stockport are a decent side. I think the postponements might help us. Not playing Newport, that would have been a tough game on their pitch. Walsall was going to... I would have liked the Walsall game to take part because they've got Leicester in the FA Cup on Saturday, and I think a lot of 50-50s they would have been getting out of them because they don't want to get injured. Pell would have been in his element against them, and I think we could have done them. But it means that Johnny Jackson's had this team and the players that we bought in for longer. We've been training at, I think, Elmbridge. I didn't even know that existed until the other day when they mentioned
that's Walton and Hersham.
Walton and Hersham, I noticed the old days when we had to beat them, and we went down there and they beat us 4-0 when we were going to win the league. I've got a boat down there. But they... And they
I remember that game.
Do you remember when?
Yeah, my team 4-0. Lost 4-0 as well, and I didn't get a boat. So there you go.
But yeah, and so we've been able to train. It's gonna be a very tough game. We've got a very tough schedule coming up with Stockport and Orient. I'm going to the pubs in Orient and hoping I can pick up a ticket on the day, because if anyone has two tickets, please let me know. Because
can you imagine there's a ticket out for Wimbledon late in Orient? We've made it, haven't we? Absolutely made it.
There's hardly any tickets for Saturday either now. You can't. It's all single tickets for Saturday against Stockport.
You know what the hack is, fellas, for late in Orient away? You know you can Airbnb the apartments that are in the corner.
Okay.
I mean, they actually...
Oh, Lee, I'm seeing us there doing the pod live on the game. That is sensational.
Barry Hearn used to own a load of them. Yes. And he would house the lone players in there, but now you can Airbnb a few of them.
I'm going to have a look, because I know there's loads of people about tickets, but yeah, we could... That could be a... I'm going to have a look at that. Cheers.
Are you going to rent and sublet? charge people a fiver to get in.
Yeah.
It's part of the empire. But
don't do that.
Don't worry, we'll be doing it. But no, well, thanks for coming on, Andy. I know you're super busy being a big shot, and it's nice to see that, you know, me and Lee are giving, you know, a young kid from up north a chance to get on local radio, isn't it, Lee? I mean,
I'll never forget you guys.
Hey, don't forget us on the way up, Andy.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks very much for coming on.
Cheers, you guys.
Thank you.
So in terms of firstly, what a great bloke, Lee.
Ah, brilliant. I love, mate. I listen to him all the time on TalkSport. I see him on BT as well. He does another podcast. What's it called?
Where is it?
We've got some punchy Wimbledon fans, by the way. And if you're out there and you're even remotely famous, get in touch. Let's have you on.
Well, we had Jonathan from the States, who does radio. And he's on the Football Ramble podcast. Check it out. It's a decent podcast.
It's just interesting, you know, the things that he was talking about. And obviously with his experience in Europe and stuff, it's quite... I like some of his takes, particularly on the guitar in the Saudi League. And obviously, I think the big thing for me, which I thought was fascinating, is about whether this Assad deal is going to be worth it for him in the long term. But anyway, we were talking about Stockport. So Stockport, it's going to be with the breaks. It's always a bit weird, isn't it? Because you always feel like you've got like the break is going to benefit you. But do you think it has? We haven't got anyone who's particularly injured.
It didn't help last year when we were in League One and we had that huge break. Remember, we come back and then we didn't win a game again for years. But I think this one could help because as I said, we're training at a decent facility.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Which I didn't even know existed until the other day. Then they said, I thought we'd be training at Carr Shorten. So that's good that we've been able to train. The new players, Little, Ali and all them have now been able to bed in, do you know what I mean? Get some of their personality on our team and stuff. And do you know what I mean? So the problem is we're playing Stockport is going to be one of the toughest tests that we face. They're a very good side. I don't know who they've brought in or if they've brought in anyone, but yeah.
Ali Madden always finds a way to score against us as well. I don't know if you noticed that. Like every time we play him.
Is he playing for them now?
Yeah, he plays for Stockport.
He was at Fleetwood.
Well, he was the last time I remember. So in terms of with all the new players in, obviously we've got loads of newbies. How are you lining up, mate? What are you thinking? The back four, I think, probably pretty much at the moment picks itself, doesn't it? In terms of Villa, Curry, Callum Bailly and Pearce. I think that kind of picks itself. And then as we go forward, it comes a bit more murky. But what would you do? You're playing Woodyard plus one, are you? And who's that one going to be, probably?
Who am I playing?
You're going to play Marsh? You're going to play Little? Bendel's obviously not around.
I think we go Little, try and push Pell up. I think he'll go Chislett. It's tough. I think he'll go 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
I think Little and Woodyard would be the two. Who is it? One wing. Do you reckon he'll start the new lad?
Well, I thought Pearson was decent. I think he'll go
Pearson, wing, Chislett one, and then Pell, and then Davison up front on his own. But then you've got to try and get...
I thought Hamadi played really well the other day. I know it was 0-0, but he came on and gave a lot of energy. I wonder whether or not they might go with two up top. They might do like a four, like two wide, two up front, two sitting, and maybe Pell sitting with Woodyard. They might go Chislett one side, Pearson the other, and then the two lads up front. But I wouldn't be surprised if they put Little in. I wasn't overly bothered about Marsh. I think it's going to be an interesting last week for him because I think I wouldn't be overly surprised if Marsh drifted, if that makes sense. And he was probably someone in the coal. But in terms of form, Stockport, I'm always a bit concerned about Stockport because I feel like they're going to be one of them teams that really come on a charge. And they're kind of the 10th now. In the last five league games, they've won four, lost one. So it's kind of that we're kind of middling form, having had really good form. But again, I guess we're basically one game away from being right on top of the playoffs with a push. So what are you thinking? What are you happy with in the weekend? Well, just a game to take place, probably, isn't it?
I think it will, because as I said, it is getting warmer. Walsall probably could have happened. I don't blame them for calling it off when they did, because I said Newport, a lot of people got up there and wasted their time and money. I take a draw right now. Stockport is, I think, up there with Stevenage at the moment. That's one of the toughest ties you can have.
Stevenage won again yesterday, didn't they?
Yeah, well, they beat Orient 3-0. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
He's so annoying, Steve Evans, isn't he? Can't stand the bloke, but he's actually really good at managing, which is annoying.
He does do very well.
Yeah, I think a draw is fair. And do we want to briefly just touch on the new signing potentially?
Sorry, go ahead.
You're just not listening to me at all.
I'm Airbnb. I'm looking at Airbnb, mate, for the game on Saturday. I think I found one. But yeah.
I was just saying, do we touch on the almost certain new signing, Saido Djene?
I was a bit underwhelmed, to be fair. You look at his CV, you look at what he's done, he ain't done a lot. He scored all his goals for Torquay in the Conference South, which we were saying is
probably really?
What... Yeah, so he scored, what, one, two goals in 3 years? Cambridge fans didn't really rate him, but they said he didn't really get much game time. But then, as I said before, Lyle Taylor, Elliot, if you talk to Cambridge fans about Tom Elliott before we signed him, they said he was horrendous. He was one of our best players when he came to Wimbledon. So I take him on paper, see what he's like. We raved about some of our loan players last year and they were awful. So let's see what he's like on the pitch first, if he'll get us on. I think he's replacement for Courtney Senior. I think Courtney Senior will be gone by the end of the month. I think he's still training with the team, which is fun, but I think, yeah, he'll be gone as well. But yeah, we'll see. Any other signings do you reckon we need to make?
I think it was interesting losing NYC because I feel like that is quite a heavily populated area now. And with Hamadi, with Davison, with Robinson, and with this new guy who I believe is a forward-minded player, I'd be very surprised if he brings in another attacking forward if he's doing it. For me, the glaring space now is a holding midfielder. I feel like if you're going to... Marsh's, Woodyard's decent. Bendel's gone out on loan, which was exactly what we needed. Thank God for that. And going to Eastbourne, which we kind of know, done a good job with Jack Curry. I think that's a great move for him. I feel like we just need another player to play next to Woodyard. But I'll say exactly what I said before. For me, I'm not bringing it... Unless someone is giving us a player for free... I'm not bringing anyone in unless we can definitely get them as a permanent.
I'd like to see a defensive midfielder come in that could possibly, as I said, a Riley Taylor could go centre back if needed. I think the window's done. But yeah,
you think we're done now?
I think we'll bring in one more. I think it'd be a centre back. I think we're going to bring in, which I don't think we need with Will coming back. I think we need a defensive midfielder really to go in next to Woodyard. Marsh unfortunately hasn't cut it. But he'll be good to have on the bench. And yeah, that's pretty much. What do you reckon? What's your predictions?
I'm going to go for... We've been really good defensively, but I feel like they're a touch above. So I'm going to say that we will be the second best team, but we'll get a 1-1. I think Stockport are going to be on the charge now. I think they're going to come right the way through and I think they'll get in the playoffs and then some. I think the top three are pretty much, Leighton Orient are well gone. So I can't see us even remotely, anyone getting anywhere near Leighton Orient really. So I feel like Leighton Orient are going to go and do one and we're not going to see them again in a hurry. And I think Stevenage are going to still do the same. And I think that after that, it's going to get congested because, like I said, I feel like there's going to be enough energy in Stockport to go forward. So... Yep, I'm going to go for Stockport. We'll be better than us, but we'll get a 1-1.
No, I agree.
All right. Yeah, thanks for chatting. Okay. Since your mate's gone, by the way, you've been rubbish. Like, literally, you've just completely ditched me for your sort of celebrity mate. And this is a joke, and I'm not putting up with this next week.
I do apologise.
No, you don't apologise. My mate Andy. He's great.
Mate, I was very nervous.
You're trying to look just like him.
He's very good. I haven't shaved my beard. I've got a still full beard going on, mate. I've got my flat cap on.
Your heart's not in it.
Looking the nuts. Right. Well, thank you very much, Danny. Thanks very much, Andy, for joining us. What a guest. Probably the best one so far.
That is going to put some noses out of joint. Go on, you dons.
You dons.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Wombles Had a Dream podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Wombles Dream and on Facebook at the Wombles Had a Dream. Get involved. By the fans, for the fans.